Welcome to Why Mastermind. The topics will be raw, unedited, and unfiltered. Viewer discretion is advised.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Why Mastermind. I have the pleasure of having Zian Virji on the podcast. Zian, do you mind just giving my listeners, those who probably don't know who you are, 30-second elevator pitch about who you are, you know, why you're on the podcast, why you're here?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm Zian. I am 22 years old. I'm from East Africa, but I moved to Canada 3 years ago. And I've worn a bunch of hats over the last couple of years. I ran a nonprofit that I started when I was 15 in the menstrual health space that I managed to scale to helping over 25,000 people in 10 countries. That opened up opportunities to work in a range of other spaces, such as climate health, education. More recently, I worked on venture in the fintech loyalty space for a couple months, but as of actually a couple of weeks, I decided to drop down from that, and now I'm going full-time on a different venture called Leaders of Today that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, so that sounds really interesting. How did you get started in doing business and really moving toward what you're doing now? So if you could take us back to when you first started.
Yeah, for sure. So as I mentioned, I grew up in East Africa. I was born and raised in Tanzania, and Tanzania is very different from Canada. It's a completely different environment. But growing up, I grew up with strong values in my community of, you know, service, giving back, community. Those were big elements of growing up. And when I was in grade 9, I had the opportunity to move to Kenya to go to boarding school there. And as part of my education in Kenya in grade 9, I was required to do a personal project, and I could do anything on my choice. And this is when I came across this documentary on Al Jazeera named India's Menstruation Man. Now, this was the first time I learned about menstruation or periods, menstrual health, completely new topic. But I thought it was super interesting, and so I had a chat with my mom about it. And she told me that when she was younger, she didn't have proper access to menstrual products. And so I was kind of inspired to do this project that eventually turned out to become this whole thing. And that was kind of the starting point for a lot of stuff. There is a bit of a backstory in terms of a personal experience that I had right before I had the opportunity to start this project. And I'm more than happy to share that as well.
Yeah. If you don't mind. So for those who probably don't know, your mom's from India, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So if you don't mind just sharing a little bit more, just a backstory.
Yeah. So basically, after I moved to Kenya, after my first year on the last day of school, I actually got dengue fever. And dengue fever, for those that don't know what it is, it's like malaria, but 10x. And there was this outbreak in Kenya at the time. And unfortunately, I got it on the last day of school before we were heading out for summer break. And so I traveled back with it to Tanzania. And because of the healthcare situation at the time, it took doctors a week to figure out what it was. And when they did find out what it was, they say my platelet count dropped so low that my organs would have started bleeding. And it was quite intense. So they obviously admitted me into the hospital. I was in the hospital for another week. And then from the point of getting discharged up to the next 3 weeks, I did physically recover, but that had mental effects on my brain. And so I basically went into this phase of 3 weeks where I was acting hypersexual and hyperactive. I didn't have control over myself. And I have no recollection of what happened. And so from the point of getting discharged to 3 weeks, I go into this phase, and then one day I wake up. I checked the date on my phone home screen, and I see that it'd been 3 weeks since the last thing I remembered. And so that was very confusing. And so I called my parents. They rushed back home, and when I ask them what's wrong with my day, like something's not adding up, not sure what is happening, they were actually relieved and they were like, okay, finally he's starting to understand stuff and he's coming into his conscious senses. And so it took me a couple of weeks to kind of figure out what I'd just been through and process that whole experience. What was really confusing was also a lot of people had different theories about what happened. And so we had doctors that would say the dengue fever affected my brain functionality. We had a psychologist that misdiagnosed me for bipolar disorder at the time and said, I just went to a manic episode. We went to religious priests and they thought I was possessed. And then went to like a Reiki master and she was like, one of your chakras is misaligned and a negative entity passed through you. So everyone had a different theory and I honestly didn't know what to believe. It was very confusing, but what I did believe was that whatever I just experienced happened for a reason. And I did believe that I recovered from it. And for me, it felt like some sort of wake up call for myself to, you know, really reflect on my life. And what I started asking myself the question, I was like, what if I did lose my life through this experience? Would I have been satisfied with the life I've lived in the last 15 years? And my answer to that was no. And that is when I really started becoming intentional about all the different aspects of my life, the relationships that I had, the friends that I have, how I was doing in school and taking that seriously. And then coincidentally, I go back to school, required to start up this project. And what's weird is the timing of it, because I'm required to start up this project and this project sort of reminded me of what my purpose was and the answers I was seeking for from this experience that I just had.
And you know what? It's really interesting that at least a couple of the guests that I've had on, they may not have necessarily had a near-death experience like you have had, like and being really, really sick or being in the hospital or losing large stretches of time. But again, there seems to always be just that one moment where they recognize, hey, I'm here for a purpose. I'm here for a reason. And they start moving towards that reason, whatever that reason may be.
Yeah.
Sometimes the entrepreneur or the person that I'm speaking to will often say, well, I haven't really found that purpose yet, or I'm still searching. But again, they're on that path to figuring it out. So I'm always curious, especially speaking to people from different countries or different regions around the globe. What's the difference? What's the difference between, again, doing business in Africa since you started for the menstruators in Africa? What's the difference between doing that in Kenya versus doing it here?
I think there's a lot of differences. And so at the time I was 15, we ran as a non-profit, but the same principles apply to business. So from a legal perspective, one, it's really hard to get register your nonprofit or your business. And so you have to hire a lawyer.
In Africa. Okay. Yeah.
You have to hire a lawyer. You have to go through this whole process. There's all these requirements. Whereas here, when I got here and we registered, it was simply a 30-minute process online that you do on your own. And it's so straightforward. And so that was a big challenge for me, especially. And there's all these requirements about how you have to be a citizen of the country and you have to be over the age of 18. And so if you're under the age of 18, it's almost impossible for you to start something. And so there's all these rules. And I think that was a big part. And then in East Africa, there's a lot of like corruption and there's a lot of business done under the table, as they say. And it's more so about the people that you know and your network versus providing real value. And from a business standpoint, like, you know, family members start businesses. In this part of the world, the market's really saturated, right? Every idea you can think of is probably already done. And if you want to win in business, you really have to figure out what your unique selling point is and have a strong enough value proposition and a business model, right? Whereas in Africa, what people mostly compete on is price. It's more so about how is it that you can provide lowest price and everyone, you can be on one street and everyone has the same products, same services that provide. And basically everyone's just competing on price. And so you just go to the cheapest person or you go to the person that's closest to you, you know? And so that's in Africa business done in a very traditional sense. And there's a lot of room for innovation, but a lot of the traditional businesses still operate like that. And I think at least for me, I've seen from a traditional business standpoint, that's a big thing.
I guess my next question would be, would you consider going back after your, because again, I know you're going to school here, but would you consider going back?
So the plan right now is to stay in Canada. Definitely want to get that whole PR thing. Sounds very enticing and have a Canadian passport eventually. But I do see myself, if not spending 50% of my time back in East Africa, like spending a percentage of my time back there. And if not, then investing into Africa because my heart lies there. And I definitely see a lot of opportunity for growth. We have the youngest population on the continent in the world, which means great, great workforce and a lot of room for innovation and a lot of problems to solve for. And so I definitely see a lot of opportunity there. And I know at some point I will be investing a lot into the continent as a whole.
Yeah. Sounds absolutely amazing. I know for me, one of the things that I've always wanted to do is probably give back more to my own community to really be able to pour in and to head more into your space of doing social impact and kind of moving more towards, instead of leading with my, instead of doing business more so for the money, doing it more so for just the impact and just for the good that it'll do. If you don't mind, tell me what the first 100 days of starting and running for the menstruator was actually like.
I know that
a lot of people are like, well, you start a business and then you kind of go through a bit of a training period and then you're up and running and you're doing really well. That's not always the case. I always like to always ask people, you know, what was the first week like? What was the first month like? What was the first year like of you doing this? What were your triumphs? What were your failures? What did you learn over those first 100 days?
Yeah.
In what you're doing.
Yeah. So for us, I mean, we as in me as an individual at the time, you know, I'm inspired by this idea. I see that this is a big pain point. 500 million people around the world don't have access to menstrual products. I think in Africa at the time, an average of 1 in 10 menstruators didn't have access. In East Africa, I think the numbers were around 50 to 65% of people that menstruate don't have access to products. So clearly it's a big pain point. And so I'm like, okay, I know this is a problem. For a lot of businesses, you got to validate your problem, right? And you got to validate your solution. And so for me, before anything, I needed a product. And so I go online, I check out all these different menstrual products. And for me, I always knew I wanted to do something that was sustainable and something that was cost effective, because that's what the market needs. And so I go online, see all the different prototypes for products, and I come across reusable menstrual products, and I'm like, this sounds super cool. I gotta make my own. And so I didn't know how to stitch at the time, didn't have any sort of skills of that sort, but I worked with a local tailor, come up with a couple of designs based on the prototypes I'd seen online. And then worked with a local tailor to come up with a design of my own that would last for 6 months. I make a bunch of these. I give it out to all my friends that menstruate to try it out, get some feedback about the product, see if it works, see if it doesn't work, iterate, make some changes, and then go to my... And so all of this takes around the research, making the product, and then eventually going into my first community took around 9 to 12 months. Keep in mind, I was a high school student at the time, so it definitely took me longer, but I'm sure if you're doing this full time, it'd take you way shorter. And so I go to my first group, I have this product that lasts for 6 months, and I give it out to them, to 22 of my traders in a small city in Tanzania. And I feel so good about myself. It was a school project at the time, so I go present about it in school. I called it iPad at the time, just because I thought that was funny, and I put my picture next to Steve Jobs when he was revealing the actual iPad. and it was, yeah, super, super exciting. Present about it, got a good grade. I didn't get 100%. I got like a 6 out of 7. And so I was kind of disappointed there, but I'm like, yo, I just did this really cool project, made a product of my own and distributed it to all these people, right? And I've had some sort of impact, so I'm feeling really good. I could have pretty much stopped at that point, but because that marked the end of my school project, but I went back to the community that I gave out these products to and asked them for some feedback. And that's how you should run any business, right? Like, you know, have a product or service, give it out, get feedback, and then iterate. So I didn't know that at the time, but I just went to get feedback. And the feedback that I got was, I actually contributed more to the problem than solving it. And so I'm like, what? Like, I just spent 1 year working on this. Yeah. And you're telling me that I am actually contributing more to the problem than solving this. And I'm like, okay, why are you saying that? And so they're like, one, the product that you're giving us is only going to last for 6 months. What happens after the 6 months that this product runs out? Now we're going to keep depending on you to come and help us out. And in reality, you've just created a dependency syndrome where we're going to keep depending on someone else to help solve our problem.
Yeah.
Two, my product did not come. I didn't have considered so many things that I should have considered. So things like soap to actually wash these products, underwear to actually wear these products. Some of them didn't have access to water. The designs were the color of the product was white, but it's going to be period blood on these things. And so it's going to stain. And I did not even consider that as a thing. So all these different factors, basically, I never considered because obviously I wasn't facing that problem myself and I hadn't spent enough time with my target audience to understand the pain point, right? And so I basically take all that feedback, come back to school, and I'm like, one, I realize I'm super passionate about this topic and I spent 1 year on this and I've gotten all this feedback. I want to do something about that. And so step one, I'm like, but in order for me to do that, I can't do it alone. And so we start up a team. We're a couple, 7 to 10 volunteers at the time that were helping out, just students at my school. And what we did was we changed two main things. One, we changed our product. And so we worked with a local group of women with disabilities that actually had their own reusable products and they knew how to stitch. And we're like, hey, you guys have your product. We have our product. How about we come together and come up with a better product? And so we redesigned our packages and now our packages last 3 years. They are 100% biodegradable, cost effective, embarrassment free. And it comes with underwear, soaps, a waterproof bag and all these things I never considered before. And the good thing was by working with them, we were also providing them a source of income as employment, which was helping that group as well, right?
Yeah.
Then the second thing that we changed was our approach. And so one feedback that we got was, you're giving us all these products, but we have never even learned about reproductive health. We don't even know what it actually means to have a period on its own. Like, all we know is that we're bleeding once a month, right? That's all we know. And so we then go back to, we create a model of approach in which we'll go into a community, do a needs assessment, understand their context, build a relationship with them. And then we have an educational workshop where we actually teach both people that menstruate and don't about reproductive sexual health because it's usually not part of their school curriculum. Yeah. And then we'll go in, give them the product, teach them how to use and wash it. But then what we also do is we teach them how to make their own. And now the good thing about this is because we use locally available materials, we know that after the 3 years that this product lasts, these people are not going to have the skills to make their own product. And in reality, they have lifelong access to the skill, right? And they can have lifelong access to this product. It's that whole idea of don't give a man a fish, teach a man a fish, right?
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, what we've also seen is that if you provide someone a skill, they then pass that skill on to someone else, and that person passes it on to someone else. And so there's a group of 1,000, and me going and provide a skill to 10 people, those 10 will share it with 10 others, and those 10 will share it with 10 others, and eventually the whole community of 1,000 will have access without us even intervening, right?
Yeah.
And so we change that, and then we usually end with the celebration and review phase where we assess the impact of our work, get more feedback, and iterate. And we usually, in some communities, have also seen how we can create entrepreneurial opportunities for all these different people using the skill that we've provided them. So now how can they use the skill and this product to sell it within their own community so that they make a living and then eventually they can make a living and eventually they can come out of this poverty cycle that they're trapped in. So we made all those changes, and that change took another like 6 months to a year to kind of fully figure out, and we keep iterating. And yeah, now it's been, well, like 6-7 years. The group of 10 grew to a group of 150 young people. Our impact has reached like 25,000 menstruators in 10 countries around the world. And we've raised a couple $100,000 in donation dollars and grants and sponsorships to help us reach the people that we serve.
Yeah, and again, that's really interesting how, again, what you originally thought was going to be a great product, which it is, it's more or less ballooned into just providing more than again what you originally planned to provide.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. Again, tying back into, you know, deciding what social issues even need your attention by again going out and actually getting feedback and really asking, how can I help? How can I provide more? And not taking a stance of, well, again, I just do this and that's what I'm good at. No, you're like, okay, I can do the feminine hygiene products, but I could also educate. I could also teach them how to make their own. I could also provide materials and things like that. I could also do, you know, classes and things like that to be able to lift people, like you said, out of these cycles that they find themselves in. Right. Which is also very interesting. Just how, again, what you thought was going to be just a school project, right, has blown into something that again, you're doing 6-7 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
I really want to switch gears a little bit, just considering that we don't really have a lot of time. So again, building a social impact brand and leaders for today, would you consider leaders of today and building a social impact brand one in the same or very similar in that you're taking the lessons that you've learned from your other ventures, like for the menstruators and really everything else that you're doing, plus going to school on top of that, and pouring it into leaders for today and trying to actually forge leaders that don't just think not just for the money that's in something, but also thinking about what will get them up in the morning. I know if you've been on LinkedIn for a while, you will have seen someone by the name of Matt Gray. I saw him maybe end of 2023. It's actually very weird to say end of 2023, but again, just hearing his philosophy of how he went from brick and mortar to online, and hearing kind of how he went from, you know, I was passionate about making sure that coders got jobs, and he was working, he was basically running almost like a job, not really a job agency, but it was basically training coders and then helping them find jobs at Google or Microsoft or whatever in the Toronto area. And what had happened was he actually got raided by the government, and he said, well, I didn't really feel fulfilled. Even though they got past that point, he's like, well, I kind of want to do something a little bit different. And then he started to travel, and then he bought another business as well, working more on like, I think it's cannabis recipes. But again, just hearing his philosophy on how he's changed his view on business. Cause again, business is not one size fits all, one solution fits all. Like, for example, you know, you may decide, hey, I want to open up a brick and mortar location. I want to actually build this into a physical business where people are going, they're actually learning in class, they're doing things that are on site and in person, or you could do a hybrid, or you could even do online, right? And you can do it through Microsoft and Zoom and things like that. But again, I guess my point would be,
how did I use the learning from For the Menstruator to Leaders of Today?
Yes.
So I think for me, like, honestly, Leaders of Today, I see it as everything I've done in the last 6 years, and I've done a bunch of random things, mm-hmm. all kind of lead up to Leaders of Today, pun intended there. but everything just makes sense in terms of everything I've worked on and all the skills and lessons I've learned. And one of the lessons I learned was just running For the Mentor and other working on other projects and mentors is a lot of first-time founders think about how is it I can make the perfect product or the perfect service that I can sell, right? And a lot of them obsess over that. But a lot of second-time or serial entrepreneurs, usually first they think about distribution. Because you could have a shitty product, but great distribution and make a lot of money. Or you could have an amazing product, but no distribution and make $0, right? Yeah. And so for me, kind of applying those lessons right now, I'm building out distribution. For context, for people that don't know what Leaders of Today is. So I started Leaders of Today in Jan 2023. The idea was, it was a passion project. I had worked in all these spaces for 6 years, and a lot of young people would reach out and be like, hey, how did you do this? How do you do that? Right. And I've always wanted to start a podcast. And so I got a couple brand deals for my social media that I never thought I could get before. And they organically came in, and so I did that, and I made around $5,000 from those deals. And I'm like, how is it that I got all this money? And I'm like, well, I am a broke college student, but what should I do with this money, you know? And I'm like, I've always wanted to do a podcast, but there's so many podcasts out there. How can I do something different? Create like really good content, right? And so I was still in that mindset of like creating the perfect high quality product, right? And so I created this. I hired a whole production team. We got a space. We filmed for 8 hours for 4 days, got 16 guests, and created this really high quality production content. And I thought if I have an amazing high production content, like, I'm going to be fine, and the views and the lessons are going to come on its own, right? Yeah. I knew that we post from January to April every day, release an episode every week, and our numbers didn't do as well. We didn't get to a position where we could have some serious conversation with sponsors to continue doing a podcast, and that was the hypothesis at the time. And so I'm like, okay, that's $5,000 down the drain, but yeah, lesson learned, and a very expensive lesson learned for me at the time, but lesson learned. and then I kind of like April, May comes around, and I'm like, I started working on a different venture. I got into this incubator in Toronto, and I was doing that for the whole summer and until December. But mid-October, I'm like, from the feedback that I got about the podcast from the young people that were reaching, a lot of them were like, hey, I'm so inspired by the podcast, but like, what do I do next, right? Like, how do I actually, you know, start my own and actually pursue my own passions? Like, I'm so inspired by listening to Joshua's story, but what do I do next and how do I apply it to myself, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, that's interesting, right? And I think about what are the pain points that I had when I was starting off and how did I get to this point, right? And what I end up doing is I start building out a newsletter. And as part of the newsletter, I share different ideas or lessons that I learned from when I just started. And what I also do is we share a list of 50 plus opportunities and 30 plus resources to young people and are like, hey, we have this list. This is a way for you to actually get a grant for you to start your project. This is a conference you can actually go to apply some of your skills, you know. This is a fellowship you can actually, or a scholarship you can actually apply to. So we have this list, and then the resources is basically how to start your own nonprofit, how to start your own business, how to start your own podcast 101. Mm-hmm. And we started sharing that on LinkedIn, and those posts kept blowing up. And we went from around 4,000 or 5,000 subscribers mid-October. We hit, I think, 8,000, 9,000 mid-November. And then in the last 6 weeks, 2 months almost, as of this morning, we're at 80,000 subscribers on the newsletter. And
so you're definitely doing something right.
Exactly. And kind of going back to the lesson of like distribution, now that I'm building this community of young people that all have the same values of they want to change the world, whether it's through sports, whether it's through arts, whether it's through business, whether it's through nonprofit, mm-hmm. we all share the same vision of changing the world. And I'm trying to build this community through my newsletter. We hope to bring the podcast now that we have some level of distribution. We hope to host events. We're basically going to run like a media platform and community platform on its own. And that's the goal. And so I thought it was important to share that, and a lot of this has happened very recently, just in the last 6 weeks. And so as we're speaking, I'm learning a lot and I'm trying out different things and I'm in the first 100 days. But I thought that would be great insight to share.
You know what? I would say as well is that the one thing that I absolutely find very interesting of how Canada basically sets up its entrepreneurs is that if you want to start a social entrepreneurship or a social venture, or if you wanted to do a nonprofit, the money is there in ample amounts. I know for me coming more so from a manufacturing side, or actually a manufacturing side of music, the money is there. However, once you start to transition into for profit, that's when the money starts to dry up a little bit, but that's fine. But again, like you said, you're trying to build people up and trying to get them to see, hey, I can actually do this. It's just one step at a time. It's one day at a time. You know, entrepreneurship is not, it's not a job choice. It's a lifestyle.
Right? Yeah.
And you essentially define what that lifestyle can be. You'll definitely need to put in the work. That's obvious. But again, you can decide if you want to do it online, if you want to do it in person, you know, what kind of management style do you have? It's very much like podcasting nowadays. A lot of podcasts are online. A lot of podcasts are in person. A lot of podcasts are both, right? So again, giving people an outlet to actually be inquisitive and to have support is something that to be honest with you, I wish I had when I was starting out. And that's something that I would hope for a lot of entrepreneurs in the future that come up behind you and I, that again, have this desire, that they would have the support to be able to actually go for what they want to go for, whatever it may be.
100%. Yeah. And don't get me wrong in terms of, yes, our core mission with Leaders of Today is to help young people start their own leadership journey, but we are running as a for-profit company here. And we don't, I've worked too long in the nonprofit space to to know how hard it is. And we want to run as a for-profit company, as a media company, and we hope to work with brands that want to work with their community of people and want to target that demographic. And so our goal is to run as a media company in a for-profit lens with the core mission of helping young people. And I think everything only makes sense when you're able to have dollars in your bank account whilst you're able to have an impact on other people's lives, right? And that is what is aligned with my purpose. And I think that's the only way to do it, to be honest.
Yeah. And again, that's the way that makes sense, because again, like you said, it takes a lot of dollars to do something as a social enterprise. It takes a lot of dollars to even do something for profit. So again, make it being again really clear about what you're standing for this podcast and moving forward not just for the podcast, but again for the media company, really, really will provide you with doors. And again, if like a brand comes to you and says, well, again, I will give you just exposure. You're like, well, I kind of need money to run this thing. And it's not going to be cheap because every episode costs money, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just honest and fair.
Exactly. And we have the distribution that a lot of these companies, like Gen Z, is going to have a very high purchasing power in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And they're a demographic that a lot of big brands are trying to figure out how to reach. And with my brand and everything that I stand for and the trust that I've built over the last 6-7 years with my own lived experiences, that's something I hope to leverage to offer to these brands and to reach the demographic that we're reaching.
Yeah. I just have a couple more questions before I let you go. So again, what would you say? I guess I'll pray with these two questions together. How do you decide if I was coming to you and saying, hey, Zian, I want to do a social enterprise, but again, I don't know really what I want to do. How would you help me figure out what social issues need my attention? And then also, how can everybody else around me or someone that I know adopt a posture of getting involved for social change?
I think,
in your opinion.
Yeah. I think, for me, I always refer to this Japanese concept called Ikigai.
Yeah.
It's become very popular in this last couple of years, but I first came across it in 2019, 2020, and it's been life changing to kind of just approach my life through that lens. And Ikigai, for those that don't know, is a Japanese concept that has basically, a lot of research show that it's one of many factors that have led to longer lifespans and life expectancy for the Japanese. And Ikigai is basically, think of it as a Venn diagram with four circles. And one of the circles is, what is it that you love doing? Second circle is, what is it that you're good at? Third circle is what can you be paid for? And last circle is
what the world needs.
Yeah, what does the world need, right? And combining all of those four, at the center of it is your Ikigai, at the center of it is your purpose, right? And so all of these questions around how is it that I can help change the world, all of those questions lie within yourself. And there's a million and one ideas, if not a billion and one ideas, in our day-to-day lives that we experience, right? And so trying to look within yourself in terms of what are some challenges that I faced when I was younger? What are some pain points that I have on my day-to-day life? And then combining that with the three remaining circles, I think there's a lot that you can find answers to there. And when we talk about purpose, you know, for me, initially, when I talk about purpose, I talked a lot about it being as something you find once, and that's going to be your purpose for the remaining part of your life. But I realized that the older you get and the more life experiences that you have and the more change your experience and progress that you make. Your purpose changes over time. And so when I was 15, my purpose was I wanted to change the world. And I didn't know what that looked like, but all I wanted to do was change the world.
Yeah.
Which I still want to do, change the world, but like now I have a more realistic approach and I'm more specific about I want to help 1 billion young people around the world become leaders of today. And that is, at this point in time, that's my purpose. But a couple of years ago, I wanted to help 500 million people get access to menstrual products. Like, so you can see how that has evolved over time. And so doing this exercise every quarter, every year to kind of evaluate for yourself where you're at and what stage you're at in your life. And obviously your needs change. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. And then just before we close, just tacking on that last little bit of a question. How do we adopt a posture of getting involved in social change? Like, again, what would you consider to be the correct mindset in order for people to really get involved?
Yeah, I think the current mindset, I mean, the best mindset to have is a lot of people think of social change as something that like, hey, I need to make $1 billion. And then once I acquire all these experiences and the skills and have all this capital, I may be 60, 70 years old and then feel a bit altruistic like my friend Bill Gates and want to give back. You know, I'll start my own foundation and do that thing. That's kind of the mindset or the traditional mindset that most people have. And so when you ask people, how are you making an impact? They're like, that is not a priority for me right now. Right now, I'm just trying to pay my rent that's due in a couple of days and I need to make money to do that, you know?
Yeah.
But the way I've always approached impact from when I was 15 was that impact does not mean helping 1 billion people, right? Impact means this conversation we're having right now. You asking me these questions and having this conversation with me has had an impact on me, and it's something I will stick with me, right? Impact means helping the homeless person that you see on the road, helping them out, or even just having a conversation with them. Impact means asking your best friend, how are you feeling today? I haven't asked you that in a while. Like, impact can be so small, and you don't need money or experiences or resources in order to have that impact or have that social change, as you called it. I think impact is something that you can do in your day-to-day life, and it's something you should incorporate no matter what you're doing, right? If you're running a podcast business, like, you having conversations is an impact. If you're selling headphones, like, you are now helping people listen better. That is impact in its own sense, right? And so just reframing that mindset and approaching that in your day-to-day lives in the smallest ways. And if you think about it, most people think when you're giving someone impact, when you're making an impact, you're actually helping the other person and the other person is benefiting from that transaction. But in reality, you're the one that actually benefits more than the other person because you have the satisfaction and the feeling and feeling of significance that you're being able to help that someone else. And in that process of doing that, you're actually winning more than the other person, if you think about it. And so reframing that approach towards impact, because when you do stuff like that, you feel a sense of purpose, you feel a sense of significance, which very large percentage of people in this world don't feel, right? And so for me, what's funny is throughout my experiences, the moments where I struggled most with my mental health has been the moments where my coping mechanism has been to go and help other people so that I can feel significant to cope with my mental health. And it's been such a game changer from mental well-being point of view. And so those are just kind of some thoughts that have come up based on your question.
Oh, cool. Well, you know what? I definitely agree that again, like you said, mental health wise, it is important to take the lens off yourself sometimes and against off of what you're struggling with and to put that spotlight on someone else. Cause again, it definitely gives you a time to pause and time to really be thankful for the one you have or don't have in some cases as well. And again, actually being able to take a step back and say, well, you know, life isn't so bad.
Yeah.
Which is good. Just before we wrap up, where can people find you, Zian? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so anywhere on socials, at Zion Virgi, you can find me. And then at Leaders, our socials, we're going through a lot of changes, as I mentioned, but current domains are going to be Join Leaders of Today. And you can check us out on mostly Instagram and LinkedIn as well, if you use LinkedIn.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Zion. Do you have any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I think this is a great chat. I think just reminding people, like, hey, no matter what stage you are in your life, like, you got this. And if you have a passion, if you have a purpose, if you have an idea, don't wait until tomorrow, because tomorrow never comes. You're not only a leader of tomorrow, you're a leader of today, right? And that's a message that has really helped me actualize all these ideas I've had over the years. And yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate you a lot. And thanks for this great chat.
Yeah, man. No problem. Happy to do it. Hopefully one day they will be able to meet in person. I'll be able to do this again.
All right. Likewise. Awesome.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Why Mastermind. If you want to be a guest on the podcast, please visit the website and hit the Be a Guest tab. If you want the show clips, please read the folder description before accessing the clips. All relevant links are in the podcast description. All episodes are available wherever you consume podcasts.